Well, hey, it's great to see you here this morning, and my name's Kurt. I'm lead pastor here, and you know, these two things you just saw, this song from Lifehouse and this little bit right here from Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake really kind of capture what Crosspoint is about, and I'm going to dive into talking about how we try to shape culture here today, and you know, the hashtag kind of embodies culture right now, and one of the things I want us to see today is that God has always been pro-culture. God has always been pro-culture. In fact, God has always been about his people creating culture, and it's the very first command that God actually gives in the Bible. In fact, we read this in the very first book of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, says this. It says, "And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it." And so theologians have been looking at this passage for years and years, and they've kind of seen this as God's cultural mandate to human beings. That God's kind of saying, hey, you know, for those of you who are created in his image, which is all of us, we're all created in the image of God, we're divine image bearers of God, whether we know God or not, he says, I want you to go and I want you to shape the culture in my image. And so what he means by that is he says, you know, I want you to, through your art, through the ways that you communicate in song and in media and in video and technology, I want you to reflect my character and image. And things like businesses, you know, establish businesses and things that bring benefit and help people and families to thrive in our culture. Even things like leadership systems and government systems, you know, these structures that create justice for our communities are all things that actually reflect the very character and the nature of God. And so all around us we see that God is pro-culture. God is building into culture. And so over the last 3 weeks, we've been taking a look at hashtag Four Fishers and the rest of us. And we've been taking a look at why we're here, which is primarily Four Fishers. You know, why Crosspoint exists is for, you know, people here in this community and the surrounding communities. You don't want to leave anybody out. And we just thought it'd be really important, you know, for all of us, whether you're here for the first time or you're here, you know, for the 100th time, to understand what this team is about. And so over the last 2 weeks, we've been kind of looking at the culture we set here at an organization level. And today I want to take that down to kind of a personal level, to kind of what I would call an individual level, you know, the kind of culture we create in and out of our everyday lives. Now, Eric mentioned a phrase that kind of embodies what we're about here at Crosspoint, and it's this idea that we want this church to be a place where it's okay not to have it all together. And, you know, there's all kinds of connotations with that. There's all kinds of holes in that statement. But, you know, we want this to be a place where you don't have to put a facade on. You don't have to put a front on. And we can actually walk through the doors into this tribe called Crosspoint, and we can actually authentically pursue God regardless of what we're dealing with, regardless of where we are. And so today I want to kind of talk about what that means for us. And I want to step back from the organizational level and really look at this at a personal level today. Now, this whole hashtag deal, some of you are like, what is that? And if you're a tweeter, you know, you're familiar with social media, you know, you get this. But, you know, for some of us, hashtag used to be a pound sign, right? It was like on your phone, right? And the only purpose of that pound sign was to, like, get through that annoying voicemail, you know, until you got to the point where you had to leave the message. You could just be like, hashtag, and it took you to the end where you could leave your message. But get this, 7 years ago, now just out of curiosity, how many of you can't wait for the new iPhone 6 to come out next month? Any takers on that? Yeah, a few of us in here. How many of you are going to go stand in line for the new iPhone? All right, you know there's some of you out there. You're internally raising your hand. I know. You don't want to acknowledge it, but you're raising your hand. You'll get this. Here's the thing. 7 years ago, the iPhone didn't even exist, all right? I mean, 7 years ago. In fact, there were no lines to get in for the new device because there was no iPhone. 5 years ago, Instagram did not exist. All right, 5 years ago, followers were just people that were behind you in line, all right? I mean, it didn't mean anything else, all right? And 5 years ago, we didn't refer to Google as the number one verb when it came to research. Have you ever noticed that? I use Google as a verb all the time. I'm like, I'm going to go Google something. I'm Googling this. I'm Googling. You know, we've turned it into a verb. And so, you know, this is just an example of how our culture, the culture around us, is about two things, contrast and speed. Our culture is about contrast, and our culture is about speed. Now, this is one of the reasons I'm really excited. In about 9-10 weeks, we're going to kick off something called an all-church journey. and we're going to go on this all church journey called Consumed. And this is going to kind of be like a 6-week, you know, period where this entire community is going to focus on one issue, and we're going to do a deep dive on that issue. And if you have not considered hosting for the journey, being a small group host, I really want to encourage you to do that. In fact, it's on your connection card as one of the next steps today. You can mark that. And listen, we need hosts. We need 50 small group hosts for the journey that's coming up. And you might be thinking, well, Kurt, I've never done this. It's okay. The criteria is very low. You have to basically be alive and you have to be breathing. All right? I mean, those are the two things which are one and of the same, you know, and it doesn't matter where your beliefs are, if you have a steep spiritual background or not. We're gonna give you the material to lead the group. We're going to tell you what to say to facilitate the conversation. But here's the thing. Hosts always get more out of the journey. All right, hosts always grow to a different place because when you're hosting and you're gathering people together, even if you're learning yourself, you're going to a different place. And during this consumed journey, we're going to actually be taking a look at how there's a contrast in our world. We're going to look at how there's the kingdom of God and how that is contrasted to the kingdom of this world or the world as we know it. And we're going to be taking a look at how, you know, what are we consumed by? Are we consumed by the things of this world, or are we consumed by God? Are we consumed by things that actually take away our freedom, or are we consumed by the things that give us freedom? So it's going to be a great, great time. And as I start thinking about that journey, I just realize there's when it comes to our culture, we're always in this tension between contrast and speed. Because you see, you and I, we live in a culture that's constantly, you know, saying, what I would say is saying, brand me, you know, this idea of personal branding. Our culture is constantly trying to get us to package ourselves with this perfect image, put ourselves out so everybody can see, which flies in the face of this idea of being a place where it's okay to not have it all together. And you see, we've so often fallen to this place where we feel like we have to project the perfect images, kind of like this video right here.
Look at this Instagram, ex-Benedict side of ham. Started out as a lemon tart, then my phone went and made it art.
And these are my fingernails, the beauty is in the details. Drinking my ties on a cruise, just a coincidence is also boobs.
Everyone look at my feet, get jealous that I'm at the beach. Probably knew I was going there, you saw my plane's wing in the air.
Are you bored of city lights? Try seeing them in black and white. Putting glasses on a cat, I'm the first one to think of that.
All right, now we all know that guy, right? We all know that girl. Now here's the thing, if you weren't laughing through that, you are that guy, all right? You are that girl. If you were just sitting there, you're like, oh my word, that's me on the screen right there. But see, here's the thing, there's nothing wrong with technology, absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's amazing how we can stay connected and leverage technology, but we have to pause and ask the question, how is our technology shaping me, and how is the way I interact with my technology actually shaping and forming and creating culture with the people around me? And that's really what I want to get after this morning for the rest of our time. So let's go ahead and pray, and then we'll dive into this. God, I'm thankful we can come into a dark room like this. I'm thankful for humor, and I'm thankful that you are pro-culture, and that we can engage in both right here in this setting. And God, I just pray today that you would help us to see what you want us to see, to hear what you want us to hear, and to respond in the way you'd like us to respond this morning. God, I just pray that you maybe help us see things of how we shape and create culture around us every single day that maybe we've never seen before. I pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. you know, there's a guy when it comes to technology technology and communication that was really a prophet on this scene years and years ago. And I don't know his faith background. I don't know a whole lot about what his training was, but he was very prophetic. In fact, you've probably heard the phrase, the medium is the message. He coined that phrase. And this was way before the Google machines and the internet. I mean, this is like decades and decades ago. But he was very prophetic when it came to culture and technology. In fact, here's one of the things he said that really kind of captured me. He said, we become what we behold. We shape our tools. And then get this, then our tools begin to shape us. And that was very prophetic. I mean, you're talking like 40, 50 years ago, he coined this idea that we create things and then the things we create begin to shape us. And, you know, there's truth in that. And, you know, we have these platforms now, things like screens, to share our lives. And let's be honest, these tools begin to influence our lives. They begin to, you know, cause other people to see us in the way that we want them to see us based on what we put on the screens. And so, you know, this begins to shape our relationships, and this ultimately begins to shape how we view God and how others view God. And I've just become really sensitive to this recently. In fact, I feel like I kind of have to because, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm like a celebrity in like two zip codes, all right? So like, you know, as Crosspoint's gotten like bigger and bigger, some of you didn't think that was very funny, but, you know, as Crosspoint's gotten bigger and bigger, it's not uncommon for me to be out at like dinner with my family or maybe in a lunch meeting out in the community, and somebody will come, you know, and kind of walk by, and they'll kind of do a double take, and you know, and then if they get enough, you know, muster enough courage, they'll actually be like, hey, are you Kurt Walters? And I'll be like, no, I mean, I don't know why everybody thinks I'm this Kurt Walters guy. I don't know who that is, you know. I don't usually say that, but that would be fun to say sometime. I've thought about it, and so in fact, it happened last night. I was at Lowe's, and a guy stopped and he did this double take and came up while I was doing a transaction. And usually I'm like, yeah, it's me, and y'all talk for a little bit. And usually it's really encouraging. Usually I'll hear some really cool things, like people say, oh man, I just started coming to Crosspoint, and you know, I've really connected with God, or there's been some cool things that have happened in my life as a part of being around this tribe. You know, probably the best thing and the thing I hear, I don't know if it's the best thing I hear most often, I've been hearing recently, is that when I interact with people on a personal level, they're like, wow, you are so much older than you look on stage. And I don't know if like they can see my gray hair when I'm talking to them in Lowe's or what, but you know, it's like, that's what they say. And I've thought about that. And I thought, well, why is that? Why do I look different in some cases in real life than I do here? And I thought, well, it's really because of this right here. It's because of this thing I'm standing on, which is a stage. Because you see, when you're on a stage, it actually projects an image. And the entire time that you're interacting with me on Sunday morning, you're interacting with the projected image, the person that I, you know, I'm trying to be authentic in, but you're interacting with the person that I'm trying to project that I want you to see. And the truth is, we all have this projected image because we have things like this right here. We have devices, and devices have screens. And it doesn't matter if it's an iPad or an iPhone or an Android or, you know, some kind of tablet. The truth is, we all wrestle with the celebrity of the stage because the screen is a stage. I mean, this gives us a stage in life right here. And see, for me, I kind of have to keep that in check. I mean, it's important for me to be in known community and to have people around me that I spend time with that really know who the real Kurt is, so they can help reflect back whether I'm being authentic to who I am. Because you see, I have this pre-existing condition inside of me that I have this propensity to be susceptible to this thing called celebrity. And what's interesting is you do too. Every single one of us, we have this propensity to be susceptible to this thing called celebrity. And so it's called, actually, you got a term to it. It's called the fig leaf syndrome. Maybe you've heard of it before. Fig leaf syndrome is where we're always trying to project strength and then hide our weakness. I put hide down there because the fig leaves were like to cover us up, right? So it's like project strength and hide our weakness. And the fig leaf syndrome, this is what it's called. And this is what we all want to do. And so today, my goal is to help us maybe turn off the projection of always thinking I have to project strength and always cover up the weakness, and actually to get to a point where we can say, how do I really authentically shape the culture around me by authentically living and presenting myself in terms of who I really am? And, you know, this idea of fig leaf syndrome isn't specific to me. I mean, it's not original with me. This is something we actually see in the Bible. We see it very early in the Bible in the story of Adam and Eve. We see the fall of human beings, and Eve gets confronted by the serpent in the story, and she's offered a piece of fruit, and as she looks at it, she considers it, and she realizes there's three things going on with this piece of fruit. You know, we think of it as an apple. It could have been a watermelon. We don't know. But, you know, she sees this fruit, and there's three things that hit her. First of all, she says, oh, that's pleasing to the eye. Number two, she says, oh, that looks good for food. And three, she begins to realize that this will make her wise. When she takes of the fruit, she'll know things that she currently doesn't know. And what's going on right here, I've never seen this before, but what we begin to see in the story, when we look at it from this perspective, she's actually taking something that's going to project herself in a way that's more than what she currently is, because she's not satisfied with who she is at this moment. And so it says, when Adam and Eve take the fruit, here's what happens in Genesis 3:7. It says, then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. See, up to this point, they've been living in this realm of innocence. All right, there was no sense of being naked. There was no sense of needing to hide themselves or cover themselves. And yet, they're told, when you eat this fruit, you're going to be wise, and you're going to have the knowledge of good and evil, which it's not like God. Sometimes we think, well, God must have been withholding on me. No, maybe it just wasn't time for us to be aware of good and evil. Maybe God wanted us to continue to enjoy the age of innocence. And so here's what it says. It says, they sewed fig leaves together, and they made themselves loincloths. And so they began to try to cover up their weakness. And from that point on, all of humanity has dealt with this concept of the fig leaf syndrome. And we constantly want to project strength, and we want to hide our weakness. We want to hide those parts of us that are weak. Now, a few verses later, God interacts with them again, as God interacts with Adam and Eve, he basically says, hey, there's a choice that you've made, and he asks them a very poignant question right here. And it's interesting, because whenever you see a question in the Bible, like where God asks a question, you know, you begin to realize, you know, this question is not for God's benefit, all right? God is all-knowing. God knows the answer to this. This is about God trying to elevate a concept and help someone see something maybe for the very first time. So here's the question he asks Adam and Eve, but he really asks all of us in Genesis 3, verse 11, three verses later. He says to them, who told you you were naked? Who told you you were naked? That's the question. See, we all have these places in our lives that we try to hide, and the question is, who told you that you were naked? Who told you that there's something in your life that you should not project, that you need to keep private, that you need to not disclose? And I think the person that maybe gets to the core of this and really answers this question in our times today, in our current culture, is a lady by the name of Brené Brown. And Brené Brown, she's done a lot of research on shame and vulnerability, and she kind of dives into this whole idea of how does shame and vulnerability actually shape our relationships. And here's one of the things she says. She says, shame is the swampland of our soul. Right? And she said, every single one of us, we wrestle with shame. And it's a swampland. It's like you get in it and it just goes on and it holds you down and it's messy. And she says the voice of shame actually has two tapes in our mind. There's actually two tapes that it plays over and over in our mind. The first voice, the first tape, is one that says, hey, you're not good enough. Now, maybe you've heard that from somebody. Maybe somebody around you, somebody influential in your life. Maybe somebody who really you really value what they say said to you at some point around any circumstance, hey, you're not good enough. You can't do that. Or maybe it was never said to you. Maybe it's just the tape that plays in your head. Every time you're faced with a challenge or an opportunity, you're like, that voice comes in and says, hey, who are you? You're not good enough. And then she says the second tape that plays, that we hear in our mind, is this one that says, who do you think you are? You know, a new job comes around the bend, and you're getting ready to get a promotion, and this voice says, well, who do you think you are to be worthy of receiving that promotion? Or maybe you're in a relationship, and that relationship's about ready to go to a deeper level of commitment. A great relationship is about to happen, and the voice comes up and says, hey, who do you think you are? I mean, who do you think you are that you should be worthy of receiving or deserving of that relationship? It's really fascinating because then she goes on to talk about how there's actually, you know, a gender-specific message when it comes to shame. And for women, there's three things that women, you probably connect with on this, because these are the voices that come up in your head, and it's the voice that says, hey, do it all. You know, the voice of shame says, do it all. It says, do it perfectly and never let anybody see you sweat. And so for many women, you know, you just feel like you're in a straitjacket of expectations, and there's no way you can ever live up to all the expectations. No woman could ever live up to that. And yet that's the voice that you hear in your head. Now for men, it's a little bit of a simpler voice because we can only deal like with one thing at a time. So the voice for men is this idea of never let someone see you weak. All right, never show anybody that you're weak. That's the message that we hear in our heads. And I think this is what contributes to the fig leaf syndrome. And think about it. The fig leaf syndrome is something that's exasperated in our culture today, right? I mean, never has there been a time where there's a greater urge to present yourself. Never in our culture has there been a time where we've had more access through tablets and phones and devices to actually create a platform for us to, you know, present ourselves and promote ourselves. You know, for instance, the culture of the selfie. What's a selfie? A selfie is like, hey, let me get myself in a picture with you so everybody can see, man, I'm at the cool beach right now. You know, or I'm at the cool restaurant. I mean, you might be at the sucky restaurant tonight, but look where I am, you know. And in the culture of status updates, what's a status update? A status update is simply, you know, a time where, you know, where you're like, hey, look where I'm at the concert right now, and your friends are all sitting at home, and you want people to be on Facebook or on their Twitterverse feeds going, oh man, look, Kurt is in a better place than his brother Mark, or Mark is in a better place than his brother Kurt. You know, all these status updates is to try to present ourselves or to promote ourselves. And it's fascinating because as we step back from this, the pool of the culture that we're in, we begin to see how these things easily become a vice for comparison. The selfie, the status update. And listen, this has been stirring in me for a while. I mean, I've really been trying to notice. I'm trying to get this read on, you know, what are the messages that are being sent to us about self-promotion in our culture? In fact, I ran across a web article a while back, and it was kind of like how to promote yourself, how to create a personal brand for yourself. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I started reading it. And I thought, well, man, maybe I should do that because I always struggle with what I tweet and what I don't, and so I end up not doing a whole lot. And as I was reading this, I thought, well, you know, I began to get this discerning eye as I was kind of going through this whole idea of how do I brand myself? It's a really big deal right now. And as I was reading, I began to think, man, I don't know that I want this. I don't know that I actually want my life pointing in this direction. In fact, one of the quotes from this article said this. It said, make your life one giant networking event. And I was like, oh, it makes me tired just reading that. Like, I can't go to coffee with somebody, you know, or out to dinner without it being like, oh, I wonder if I'm with this person, if they're going to connect me to the next person that I need to meet, and I'm going to see somebody when I'm out. I mean, it just made me tired thinking of my life being one constant networking event. Another phrase from this idea of personal brand was, you have to be committed to your personal brand, as committed to your personal brand as you do to your husband or wife. Let me tell you a little secret. I don't know that Julie would be happy with that, all right? I mean, I really don't. I mean, and this article was meant to be encouraging, right? I mean, this was like a positive. Let me encourage you how to get yourself out there. Here's another one. Another one said, what others say about your brand is more valuable than what you say about yourself. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, you know, there is value what people say about me. I mean, there's a value to say, letting my yes be yes and my no be no. And, you know, when I commit to doing something, that I actually follow through with it, and people see that. But I was really struggling with this idea of what others say about you is actually more important than what you say about yourself. Because that just seems like that's like leading us into this culture of slavery to everyone else's opinions. And listen, I've been there. I don't know if you've been there. I've been there. I don't want to go back there. Last one more. Said, it's what you do that makes you who you are, and what you project to others that makes you memorable. And when I read that one really kind of struck a nerve with me, because as I thought about that, I thought, I actually kind of believe that at times. I actually kind of buy into that one more frequently than not. I begin to realize, man, there's a brand that I try to create with my life. There's a brand, way that I want people to see me, a way I want people to perceive me. And hopefully I'm not always presenting this brand, but there's an image that I want people to believe about me. I mean, I just had to be honest and realize there is. So I just thought I'd pull you into it a little bit this morning. So here's the personal branding matrix of Kurt Walters right here, all right? there I am. There's me sitting in our office here at Crosspoint, all right? And yet I don't want to be seen as that. I want to always be seen as Mr. Nice Guy. Hashtag Mr. Nice Guy, all right? So there's me, Mr. Nice Guy. I always got a smile, even though I'm not Mr. Nice Guy all the time, all right? Those of you who have worked for me or, you know, see me behind, you know I'm not always Mr. Nice Guy. I want to be seen as that, though, right? That's the image that I want to give to people. And the other thing I want you to know, I want you to think that I'm just super spiritual. Hashtag direct line to God, all right? I want you to think that, like, you know, man, maybe if you've got friends that need to know God, that me and Kirk could help them. I mean, you know, I do. I mean, as much as I'm not tied into the pastor thing, I realize, if I'm really honest, this is part of what I want people to think about me. Something else I want you to kind of, you know, an image I want you to believe about me is that I am a great father. All right, dad of the year right there, all right? I want you to see, I mean, look at those kids right there. Who said Bill Cosby show ended, you know, a decade ago? It happens in my house every single night, all right? That's my home, just a different color home, but every night. But that's an image. I want you to think that, man, Kurt is a great dad. You know, another image is I want you to think of me as a sacrificial building husband right there, all right? See, my wife and I, yeah, it's interesting. Listen, when Julie married me, she like nailed it. All right, she nailed it. I mean, I was like the best guy out there. She got that one done, and she got it done. I want you to think that. I want you to think I'm the best husband. All right, forget about yours. I want you to think about I'm the best one. All right, not really. See, this is how the personal branding goes right here. And I also want you to think, and these are things I actually do really care about. I also want you to see me as under control. All right, I mean, because there are moments where. There are moments where I'm like, what's the hashtag there? Yeah, insta-cool. That's what I am. I'm insta-cool. I want you to know that my passion, man, I rein it in. It's always got a purpose. It never gets out of control. And if I'm honest, those are just some of the things when it comes to my image. And as I think about a personal brand, if I'm honest, I want people to think about me. And I realize that I want you to believe these things. And they're not, you know, I strive for them, but they don't all happen to the best, all right? And so maybe that's one of the reasons a while back when I had a decidedly off-brand moment, I kind of now can look back on that and see how that was really a gift that God used to teach me about the way I project myself. It was about a year ago. And as this time of year, actually, it's right before kids went back to school. And Julie, she works in education. She'd just gone back to school. And so, you know, the kids were at home with me, and we were bringing sitters in and out so I could get out for meetings. And I was choosing to work at home some days. And one particular day, it was a Thursday, because I was doing teaching prep. It's a day I do teaching prep. I was on my patio, and kids were playing out back. And I'm thinking, I can get some work done back here. You know, all the kids are playing. And before long, one of my kids, who's going to remain nameless, you know, along with one of our neighbors who's going to remain nameless, you know, just were kind of like at odds with each other the whole morning. And every 15 minutes, it felt like I was getting up to referee what was going on between them. And I was getting frustrated by it. And finally, I just got to the point where I was just like, all right, everybody's going home. The whole neighborhood is going home. Because, you know, like all these kids playing out in our backyard. And just kind of a little public service announcement here that I feel like I need to say in the tone of being real. You know, one of the things I really hate is when I'm out back in my, like, in my our neighborhood, you know, with all the homes and the big yard there, or I'm at the playground, and if you're somebody who doesn't parent your kid when you're out with them, I hate that. All right, I hate that. Like, if I have to intervene and like referee and like coach your kid because you're there and I hate that. I mean, especially at the park, but it even happens in the neighborhood sometimes. So, hashtag things that make Kurt act unchristian. That's what that is right there. You will see me act unchristian. You know, so one of my kids and this other kid are not getting along. And every 15 minutes, I'm refereeing, I'm sending them. And I'm like, everybody's going home. Everybody to their houses. You're all leaving the back. I like became the neighborhood cop all of a sudden. And so I sent everybody home. And as I was sending the one neighbor home, her dad happened to walk out the front door. I'm like, well, let me just explain to you why all the kids are going home. And he kind of looked at me with this like blank stare. And I'm like, you know, these two haven't been getting along, and I'm tired of them always arguing, and I know they're both headstrong, and, you know, my kid, you know, can be strong-willed, and your kid's the only child in your home. And he looks at me, and he just says, well, That's why I never come outside. I just figure they can solve it for themselves. I went off. I mean, I'm like, what do you mean? These are like fifth graders or third graders or first graders, you know? And I don't want to give it away or anything, you know? And so, I mean, I just went off. I'm like, listen, these kids need coaching. You can't just, like, leave them outside all day. I didn't even know he was home. I just figured they were letting us parent them all afternoon. I mean, he just looked at me. You know, meanwhile, one of our other kids was sitting there, and they came over to me, and they're like, Dad, this other neighbor kid, they're like, so-and-so, he's really sad right now because you're talking so mad. And I'm like, well, was he involved in this? And they're like, no, he's just watching. He was just here. So I felt really bad about that, right? So I'm going over, and I'm, like, getting down on one knee, and I'm like, dude, you know, listen, I'm really sorry that you feel like you're in trouble. You're not in trouble. It's just that we got, like, loser parent over here who doesn't care for their kids. And, you know, if they and you know, and, I mean, I'm like, this was a very off-brand moment, all right? And, I mean, I want to be a good dad. All right, I want to be a good dad, but honestly, there's times where I yell at my kids. There's times where I yell at your kids, all right? I mean, I yell at the whole neighborhood half the time. And I mean, I'm easily angered. Sometimes I'm too offended by things. You know, there's times where there's a part of my life, if I probably should just want to hide it. But listen, I couldn't wait to tell you this story today. I mean, I really couldn't. I couldn't wait to share this story with you because I want you to take a look at what Paul, the Apostle Paul, rock star Paul in the New Testament, what he learned about showing his weakness. Here's what he says. 2 Corinthians 9 or 12, he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness so that the power of Christ may rest on me. I mean, I tell you what, in God's economy, this is crazy, but it's true. The fig leaf syndrome actually has a cure. There's a cure to it. There's a cure to always having to project my strength and hide my weakness. And the Apostle Paul says the cure is the exact opposite of the brand me culture. It's actually boasting in my weakness instead of boasting in my strength. It's actually a move in humility. And we take on this move of humility. You know what Paul says right there? He says, you become a candidate for God's power to begin to work in increased ways in your lives. Right? God says, God actually operates the strongest in those of us who are willing to acknowledge that we're the weakest. And so when I read that, I think, well, man, God can take this mad pastor who's about to punch his neighbor in the face, you know, just because his kids aren't getting along and he's not out there, you know, interacting with them. And, you know, of course, I cool down. But God's like, I can use this pastor who's flipping out right here and use this guy to share my good news with other people because he's willing to use his weakness in order that my strength can flow through him. Maybe this is why, you know, Paul goes on to say, you know, in 1 Corinthians 1, 27, he says, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. And I look at that and I think, well, man, I've got a lot of weaknesses. I mean, I try to be as transparent. I mean, yeah, there's an image I create. I try to project, and yet at the same time, I really try to project that, dude, I got weaknesses. And I choose to boast in my weaknesses instead of in my strengths because I realize that when I do that, that actually opens the door up for God's power to become more evident in my life. I mean, it's amazing. I think this is one of the reasons we're really big on creating this culture of, you know, creating a place where it's okay not to have it all together. So you can't create that culture if you're always just trying to project your strengths. You've got to be willing to boast in your weakness. Here's one more from 1 Peter 5, where God says, clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Listen, there is an enemy who wants to bring you down. And one of the ways he will do that is helping you brand yourself by only presenting your strengths. Because he understands the scripture. He knows the scripture. And he understands that if you constantly show your strength, he knows that God says, hey, I oppose the proud. And so he knows as long as he can get you to constantly brand your strengths without any sense of branding the weakness, then there will always be a distance between you and God. See, humility is actually showing your weakness and being humble about your strengths. And when that happens, God's grace begins to flow. Now listen, there's a tension here. This has been stirring in me for a long time. This whole how do we manage social media and authenticity and all these, how do we create a place where it's okay not to have it all together, where we have screens, where we can constantly project, hey, look at, I can play the 5-minute highlight reel. I meet with people all the time. They're like, man, my life sucks. I'm like, why does your life suck? Like all my friends are in Mexico and in Hawaii. And I'm like, do you realize that was like 1 week out of their life and their life sucks the rest of the year like yours does? But all you're looking at is the highlight reel. And honestly, I think God, in the midst of our culture, gets really excited about the Facebook. I think he gets really excited about the Twitterverse. I think he gets really excited about the Instagram because he says, hey, this is an opportunity to create a platform where you can boast in your weakness so that my strength and power can actually be seen through you. And so that's going to be our challenge this week. All right, as we kind of at a personal level say, okay, what does it mean to build into a tribe, a community where it's okay not to have it all together? One of the postures we have to take is one where we say, okay, I'm going to boast in my weakness instead of my strengths. And so I want you to take out your connection cards. And on the back side are some next steps, and there's a few of them that I've mentioned already in terms of hosting a small group. But there's the third one on here I really want you to pay attention to this week. And this is specifically along the line of will you boast in your weakness this week? All right? Will you boast in your weakness? And that's going to be a challenge. How do I not put anything out this week, whether it's through the social media or a conversation that's telling about my strengths, but instead boasting in how, man, I've really struggled right here. Came across this hashtag this week called #RealityGrams. It was really kind of fascinating. You can check it out if you want this week. And there was like a picture on there of like somebody who posted real life stuff. It was like reality grams. It was like real life, like, you know, a guy took a picture of like a shampoo bottle in his stand-up shower next to a plunger. And it said, not the Ritz-Carlton. You know, and I thought, man, that's real life. Anybody ever had to plunge their shower before? I've had to plunge my shower. You know, that's real life right there, right? I mean, that's real life. And I want to challenge you to do that this week. To record and to boast in your weakness. In fact, how many of us have smartphones, just out of curiosity? Yeah, so I want to challenge you to use your smartphone as a dumb phone this week, all right? Believe it or not, your smartphone still has a phone device in it. You can still talk on it, all right? You can actually make a phone call. And I want you to maybe make a phone call to somebody if you don't social media and just say, hey, listen, there was a moment where I was really starting to hide something. I was trying to hide, you know, a place where I was weak, and I just thought I'd pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, you're somebody I trust, and let me tell you about this because I feel like I need to disclose it for the sake of boasting of my weakness so God's power and strength can work in me. God actually wants to send you his strength. So we're going to sing a song, and this song is a chance for us to camp out. Yeah, see, some of you, see, our volunteers are leaving, but for the rest of you, you know, that's for you. You know exactly who you are, right? See, some of our volunteers are leaving. The rest of us, we need to, you know, I believe God wants to maybe speak to us right now through how we can present our lives in a way that not just here at Crosspoint, but in our everyday life, build into a culture where it's okay not to have it all together and where God can actually be seen through my weakness. And so I want you to think about whether you can take that challenge this week as your next step. Because I'm going to boast solely in my weakness this week, in social media, phone calls, conversations, whatever it may be. And if you can do that, you can mark that on your card here. And I want to pray for us as we do that. God, I want to ask that you would teach us this week this incredibly counterculture reality of this thing you call us to, of boasting in our weakness instead of boasting in our strength. And God, help us to see that when we do that, when we experience your strength, it's because we've actually been willing to acknowledge that, yeah, there's some things in my life that aren't all together. There's some things in my life that I'm not really proud of, but it's actually in those places that your strength and your power is able to be seen and exhibited the most. And God, I want that for my life. I want that for this tribe. I want that for every single person that's walked in these doors this morning. So I just pray that you would help us to humble ourselves so that we can become candidates for your power.